Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Here we are again, everyone, one and all. We're in the political cesspool. It's Saturday, August 15th, summer going out. Man, it's going out hard. It is still hot as hell here in Memphis, but we're with you. We're sweating through another live edition of our award-winning broadcast, we like to call the Political Cesspool Radio Program. And sweating with me here in the studios of AM 1380 WLRM Radio this evening, my good friend and colleague, a man who has been on vacation the last couple of weeks. Lucky him, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you?
Well, I'm hot and perspiring like you, man, but it's great to be back in the cesspool where you can cool down.
Is it more fun to endure the summer? Let me rephrase. Is the summer easier to endure when you're on vacation or when you're here at work?
I tell you what, it's great to be on vacation, but it's great to get back to work on the cesspool.
And it's, you know, a lot's happened since your last appearance with us. Of course, Keith was last with us three Saturdays ago when we interviewed Don Wassel together of CastFootball.us. Keith is actually back on with us tonight to kind of pick up where we left off in that interview. But before we dive into the world of sports, we've got a very busy show this evening. I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to want to miss a single minute of tonight's installment because there's not going to be a wasted second. We have three all-star guests that are going to be coming on with us this evening. And that doesn't even include me and Keith. I'm not even counting us in that roster. We've got Dr. Virginia Abernathy, Professor Emeritus of psychiatry and anthropology at Vanderbilt University. She's going to be on at the top of our second hour this evening live to talk about the illegal alien invasion. Just because it hasn't been in the news doesn't mean it's been stopped. We're going to find out what's going on in the world of immigration with Dr. Abernathy. Shortly after Dr. Abernathy joins us, we will hear from Frank Roman, who is a member of the board of directors of one of my favorite organizations, European Americans United. And then to cap off the program this evening, we're going to get a live real-time, up-to-date report from the front lines of the hate crimes initiative and the hate laws. What's going on with that? We're going to hear from Ted Pike, Reverend Pike, Dr. Virginia Abernathy, Frank Roman, all forthcoming this evening. And Keith, you and I had lunch earlier this afternoon at a real five-star posh Italian restaurant. You and I both had the steak and crinkle-cut French fries. You can't get much more Italian than that.
No, you thought it was continental cuisine because they had French before fries.
That's right. I thought I was really multicultural there, eating French fries at an Italian restaurant. But nevertheless, we were treated to that fine meal, and it was a very good meal. We could have had a really nice Italian meal, but we decided to order off the kiddie menu. But we were treated to that by our good friend and one of the biggest benefactors and sponsors of this program here in the Memphis area. And in having lunch with him today, he said every time he listens to the show, he says it's better than the week before. And you know, Keith, I happen to agree with him, and we certainly want our sponsors to get their money's worth. So we try to give the best product possible each and every given week. But in terms of the last 2 weeks specifically, we're talking about last week. My goodness, what a program. Nick Griffin, member of European Parliament, chairman of the British National Party. You can't say enough about him. It goes without saying what a hero and a leader he is. But we also had Dr. David Yeagley on. And, Keith, I know this was a guy that you were quite high on even before his appearance on our program.
Yes, he's an American Indian, and he speaks out against the multicultural agenda and the marginalization of European Americans on a regular basis, which, of course, doesn't make him too popular with the people that are in charge of colleges and universities and the news media in America, but that's what makes him so valuable because he has a perfectly legitimate common sense approach to everything, and it's nice to hear common sense spoken on these issues for a change.
Well, it was a marvelous interview that Bill primarily conducted that interview. I was smoking a cigar and basking in the glow of what we had accomplished earlier in the night with Griffin. And, of course, Nick's a good friend, and we were glad to have him on. But David Yeagley's interview was equally impressive, and Bill did a great job spearheading that. We still are getting fan mail from last week's show. I was reading a couple letters that came into the mail today. A woman in Canada was commenting on the show. She was a first-time listener last week and was offered us a very nice letter. And truly, folks, if you missed it, don't forget our broadcast archives are now available free of charge, and we want you to go check it out. Nick Griffin, David Yeagley last week. For goodness sake, all of our shows go dating back to 2004 and 2005 when we first started on this adventure. Go and check them out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We had a very good interview the week before last as well with Tom Ball, the author of Starving the Monkeys, an entrepreneurial horror. Check out our interview with author Tom Ball and, of course, all of the other interviews that are there on demand, free of charge, at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And once again, we do have a great show lined up for you this evening. Speaking of fan mail, speaking of fans, Keith, I do want to make one more announcement here before we transition into the discussion of the sports world, which you have prepared for us this evening. Our Facebook page is just exploding. What a great job our friends are doing and administering that for us. And we've got it linked from our official blog there at our website. But we have now, I think, 500 fans of this program have joined up on our Facebook page since less than 2 weeks ago. It was less than 2 weeks when that was launched. And we're not in competition with anyone, especially not our very good friend Pat Buchanan. But Pat Buchanan is on TV every day, right, Keith? I mean, he's on TV every day. And I notice his Facebook page has about 1,900 fans. So we're coming for you, buddy. We're coming for you, Pat. We're going to catch you. That's the kind of cult-like. It's not even a cult-like following. We have a very mainstream and wide-ranging listening base from not only around the country from coast to coast, but indeed around the world. We are so grateful. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking to you one-on-one right now. We are so grateful for the trust and support and well wishes that we get from our friends around the world who listen to this show and contribute to it and offer us the kind emails and join up to our Facebook page. Keith, we wouldn't be here without them.
Not at all. And I think that the support that Facebook page is showing after such a short time is indicative of the fact that really conservatism, particularly authentic conservatism like the type that we serve up on this show, is extremely popular. In fact, it's so popular now that the left is reduced to desperate measures, like the SPLC saying that Rush Limbaugh is a racist, and that, for example, if you use the term socialism, that's a code term for racism, and that, people like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones on the radio are racist.
Everybody's a racist.
Everybody's racist. You know, they've cried wolf one too many times, and nobody's paying attention to them, and they're finding out that people are no longer intimidated by those labels, and that they're coming out and they're speaking their minds. And I tell you, the worm is possibly about to turn.
Well, I think it is turning, and I think you're spot on, Keith. The success and the celebrity that this show has gained is indicative of the fact that our message is a mainstream message and a natural and healthy message that is accepted and adopted by most middle-class white Americans out there. And that's our group. I mean, you listen, we don't pretend to speak for everyone. You've never heard that come out of our mouth. We are not a show for everyone, nor is the NAACP or the ADL an organization for everyone.
But you know what? We're a show for a lot more people than people people in power would have you imagine.
Well, and that's exactly right. And we know it all too well because we get to see the correspondence. We get to feel the love, so to speak. And listen, by the way, we've got a special promotion going on right now. We understand that money's not for nothing and chicks aren't for free here in the political cesspool. But we are running a special fundraising drive all the way through August 31st. If you donate to the political cesspool, you can receive one of two gifts. You can receive Dr. Tom Sunick's excellent book, Homo Americanus, Child of the Postmodern Age. This also comes with a foreword written by our good friend, Professor Kevin MacDonald. We also are offering Craig Boddicker's DVD, A Conversation About Race. Can't say enough about that. Excellent documentary. So we're talking about fans. You want to support the show? Support it before August 31st. And you're going to get a great gift as well. But, Keith, anyway, enough patting on the back, enough congratulating our fans for how great they are. They know they're great. We know we're all right. And we got to get down to business. For the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking about sports with Keith Alexander. I'm turning the show over to him. I'm going to be sitting back playing second fiddle. And it's always fun to play second fiddle to a man smarter than myself. And Keith is certainly that, and I don't mind saying it. So we're going to hear what's going on with sports when the political cesspool returns after these words from our commercial break. I'm very much excited. Can't say it enough about the presentation that Keith is going to have for us this hour. And then, of course, in the second and third hours, listen, grab a beer. Grab a beer, ladies and gentlemen. Sit back, kick back. Well, not if you're driving and listening to us on the radio, but maybe if you're at your computer or if you got a radio out there in the yard by the pool, kick back. Listen to Dr. Virginia Abernathy, Frank Roman, Reverend Ted Pike. They'll all be here and more as the political cesspool rolls on this Saturday evening, August 15th, 2009, on the Liberty News Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We got to get back to doing this show five nights a week. I mean, one night a week just doesn't contain us. Too many announcements, for one thing. Last thing I got to say, it's actually a technical point. Our illustrious network, Liberty News Radio, had a power surge this afternoon. And if you're listening to us over the internet, I understand that the 16K stream, we're maybe sounding like Alvin and the Chipmunks or something like that. Don't worry about it. 16K stream is this for those who are tuned in on dial-up. Hopefully not that many of us are still on dial-up now. Switch over to the 32K stream if you're on the internet tonight listening to us around the world. We are loud, live, and clear on the 32K stream there at the Listen Live link off of our website. So if you're listening to us on the 16K stream, bump it over to the 32K stream, and we will sound just as good as we should, or just as good as we can anyway. All right, Keith, you were on with us a couple of weeks ago. We were talking to Don Wassel, the great administrator of castfootball.us, and this has really been something that you've taken, I don't want to say a liking to, this is something that the world of sports, I guess, is something that you've really wanted to tackle, no pun intended, in recent weeks on this program, because you found a few things there that are objectionable, or at least should be objectionable, to our people. And also because football season is about to start. So what better time to talk about sports than right now on the cesspool? Keith, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, like you said, we're right on the cusp of an exciting time for a lot of Americans, the beginning of football season, both professional and college football. You know, the teams are in camp. They're preparing for their games, which will be in late August, beginning in late August and early September. In the rest of the world, you've had the beginnings of their football season, which is what we call soccer in America. But in both sports and wherever you are in the world, particularly if you're in Europe or America, you see the same phenomenon. You see the marginalization of white athletes that's been going on for decades now, both in soccer in Europe and in American football and basketball and baseball, other sports in America. And you need to make sense of it. You need to understand what's going on here. Unfortunately, a lot of people have come to the conclusion that the elite wants you to come to, which is that white people just are not superior athletes. The blacks and Hispanics are superior athletes, and that as a result, this is all fair and above board and just the way that things ought to be if we have a fair competition. But that's not the case.
Well, and Keith, a lot of people would say, hey, what are you talking about? Can't be. What y'all are saying has to be poppycock, because I turn on the television, and the NBA is 90% black. Football is majority non-white, as is baseball and some of the other sports. So they're saying there's no way. I mean, obviously the best athletes ascend to the professional levels, but I would ask them the rhetorical question, is that true in college admissions? Is that true in the placement of jobs and the hiring of jobs? So, Keith, I guess the question to you would then be, is the same affirmative action or caste system applicable in the sporting world, which keeps perhaps a superior or at least athletes of equal standing,
equally
white
talented,
athletes of equal standing down, whereas lesser athletes might be promoted?
Absolutely. The same thing is going across the board in our culture. You know, this is part of what's called cultural Marxism. They're taking over the culture, and where classical Marxism saw the world in economic terms and defined heroes and villains based on your place in the economic order. You're either a member of the oppressor capitalist class or you are the oppressed proletariat. And in the middle was the hated bourgeoisie, the middle class, capitalist class wannabes. In cultural Marxism, white males are the oppressor class and everyone else is their victims. And the purpose of cultural Marxism, which is what modern liberalism is in effect, is to marginalize and reduce the power and influence of white males in society generally, including in sports.
Well, and another reason I think it's important to infuse this, and obviously when we talk about sports on this program, we do it maybe once or twice a year. Obviously, we're here to debunk double standards and hypocrisies. We're here to talk about the issues of importance to our very survival, trade, immigration, foreign policy, so on and so forth. And then some of the secondary issues I don't get Second Amendment rights would be a secondary issue. That's about as important as they get. But, abortion and things of that nature, right to life. We talk about all that. But it's also important to talk about the stuff like sports because, let's face it, I mean, let's just be frank here with one another and speak with a degree of candor. A great many Americans value whether or not their favorite sport teams wins much more than they value their own freedom. And I think you don't have to go very hard to prove that. You see any given football stadium across America, if you're talking about college football, dozens, if not hundreds of stadiums on any given Saturday filled with tens of thousands of people each, and yet you couldn't get, my God, Keith, you couldn't get 100 people to come to a political gathering in their town if it was politically incorrect and not hyped up by the media. So this is something that's got to change. And if the Bread and Circus crowd are going to place such a high premium on their sports, then by God, we're going to talk about it and at least try to set them straight on this show.
Well, it's important even beyond that because, you know, like Wordsworth, William Wordsworth, English poet, said, the child is father to the man. And a child, particularly a male child, may not be tuned into politics and he may not be tuned into the news media or to arts and entertainment otherwise, but he certainly is tuned into popular culture, and for boys in particular, they are tuned into sports.
Well, and listen, it's a great tradition. I mean, let's not discount it strictly as Bread and Circus or as trivial. It's not. I mean, you go back, this is our system. I mean, we've been doing this forever. The ancient Olympics, this is something that our people do.
There's something instinctive in human beings. All young boys rever sports heroes. There's a sports culture in every nation in the world now, I would imagine, and kids rever sports heroes. And if they do not see people of their race and ethnicity represented, or if they are represented, they see that they are considered to be inferior in some way by the sports commentators or by the owners of the teams or whatnot, this induces what is the primary goal of cultural Marxism in these kids. It's called cultural pessimism. In other words, me and people like me are no good. Consequently, I shouldn't strive to do this. I'm an inferior being to these people that are better than me, and they're proving that they're better than me because they are represented out of proportion to their numbers in the general population on professional baseball or football or basketball teams or soccer teams or whatever. And basically, this sets the table for a life of underachievement for kids who have internalized this cultural pessimism.
Well, and with sports, just like all of the American institutions, be it academia or entertainment or professional business, whatever, what we want is true equal opportunity for all. I think that's what I want. That's what you want, Keith. That's what this program advocates for, not preferential treatment for European Americans, but equal opportunity for European Americans to succeed should they be the superior athlete or the superior
scholar. And see, it's very difficult for people to understand why white team owners, white coaches, white assistant coaches, white sports commentators would buy into this notion that we're going to marginalize and put down the talents of white athletes. They say, if all these people, if these coaches, if these managers, if these owners are doing this, they must be doing it based on some fair evaluation of who's talented and who's not.
Well, listen, Keith, we're going to pick it up right there. We have just a few seconds before our next break. But, folks, stay tuned because we're going to dive into this a little more deeply before we come out of it. And we're going to be talking about how is it that we have been so underrepresented in the professional sporting world. Is it because on the high school level we're being beaten to a pulp? We'll find out when the political cesspool continues, and then we'll talk about a very classic double standard that we can compare and contrast right after this. Stay tuned.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then
don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Peggy Sue.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
I'll be damned if it doesn't feel like we've stepped into a vortex every time we go on air. How's it already been a half an hour? Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. Don't forget to check out our website and our much-talked-about blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Sign up for our email list. Donate before August 31st and receive a free gift as a token of our appreciation. If you're listening to us right now, we sound a little squeaky. Don't forget to switch over from that 16K stream over to the 32K stream. And with that being said, we continue now with my good friend and co-host Keith Alexander talking about the world of sports. And again, we do like to cover all of the issues of importance across the political spectrum, and sometimes even talk about things that are extra political. And perhaps sports is, perhaps it isn't, because certainly there are some tenets of the politically correct dogma that we can find in sports just like we can everywhere else these days, and that's what we're here to talk about now. Keith, we were saying earlier, people see the uninitiated, I guess you would say, see the National Basketball Association, for instance, and say, well, blacks are obviously the superior basketball players. Well, they look at the NFL, blacks or non-whites are obviously the superior football players because there's just so many more of them in these sporting leagues, despite the fact that European Americans still represent 70% of the population. Is that the way it is on the high school level, Keith? I know you were sharing a story with me today when we were having lunch about how it typically goes here in Memphis because you have kids that are in high school.
Yeah, here's what's happening. You know, people look at sports, look at professional sports in particular, and say that it's obvious that non-white athletes are superior athletes, that blacks are superior in basketball and football, Hispanics are possibly superior in soccer or something like this. But, you know, there's so much evidence to the contrary that is suppressed on this that, you know, it needs to be brought to light. For example, in high school football, just about anywhere across the country, you will see when a predominantly white team plays a predominantly black team, more often than not, the predominantly white team wins, particularly when you get so-called elite white high school teams playing elite black teams. Almost in, you know, I would say they have this thing in Memphis called the Bridges Classic, which they play at the beginning of every football season, where they get some white private school teams playing top flight black public school teams from Memphis, and that's the way it breaks down in a community like Memphis. And I would say that the white private school teams win well over 50% of those games. In fact, in the top game that they've had, I think four out of the last 5 years, the white team has won.
And if you let the wisdom, if you want to call it that, of I don't even want to say common sense, if you just let the regular notions dictate who wins those games, you would say, well, obviously the white team loses all the time and they lose big.
Yeah, if you that's what would happen if what we're seeing at the professional level were truly a accurate reflection of inherent talent, but it's obviously not.
And what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? Are we saying that we want to see all white sporting leagues? Not necessarily. What we're saying is what we always say. We want the best athletes, the best scholars, the best job applicants to get the promotion or the scholarship or the position on the team.
Well,
that's
well,
what
just
we're
like
asking
the jobs
for.
And just like
that's all
college
we're
admissions or professional school admissions, there is a caste system involved in play today, which is intentionally marginalizing whites. And sports is a particularly obvious example of that. That's what's going on. That's what's happening. For example, you know, the question would be, well, why would coaches put up with this if there are superior white athletes that are not playing. Why wouldn't they want the best players? Because they want to win.
I guess it's the same reason that bosses hire underqualified applicants to fill the positions. They have to.
Yeah, there is a lot of subtle pressure involved and not so subtle pressure. For example, you know, let's say you're a top flight college or professional football coach or baseball coach, or basketball coach, let's say in America. Well, you have a very privileged position, but it's a very precarious position. And you're not going to want to buck the system if you want to continue to make millions of dollars a year coaching, because there aren't that many of those jobs out there. It's like they say in the Bible, many are called and few are chosen. And if you buck the system, you're liable to get fired. Suppose you had a Division I football coach in one of the bell ringer conferences like the Southeastern Conference that decided, I'm going to start playing more white players. I'm going to play them in non-traditional positions, like I'm going to have a white cornerback or I'm going to have a white running back. Well, if things started to falter at all, the fans who have been brainwashed and propagandized into believing in the superiority of black athletes would go nuts. If there was a mutiny on the team where the black athletes said, this guy is favoring white players and we're going to sit down on him. And they've had this happen before. They had it happen at the University of Memphis under a coach named Chuck Stobart back in the 80s, where the football team basically refused to come out for practice because they were mad about, you know, a black quarterback being benched and a white quarterback being played. It's happened for other coaches, too. Jackie Sherrill replaced a black quarterback at Mississippi State with a white quarterback. And a lot of people think that it's, you know, the scuttlebutt was the team just sat down, and as a result, Sherrill wound up losing his job. These guys don't want to buck this system. This is a system that's in place. It's a system that's been very good to them. They're making millions of dollars. And they don't have a sense of racial solidarity.
Well, and that's the key right there, Keith, not to interrupt, is that, I mean, let's not fool ourselves into thinking that all of these college coaches think like we do. I mean, many of them are, in fact, very liberal, and they don't mind the system as long as it gives them a very nice salary. And, I mean, what's it to them that there's some white kids that deserve to be on the team that aren't? But what you're talking about isn't just hypothetical. I mean, I can take it from theory to practice. Yeah, I was a high school athlete. Yeah, I left Briarcrest Christian School in 10th grade. The last 2 years I homeschooled, and I give all the credit to homeschooling for beginning me on this odyssey of political activism. But nevertheless, you could start playing basketball on the school teams in seventh grade team, eighth grade team, ninth grade team. And so I was the shooting guard on those teams at Briarcrest here, which is a very elite private school in Memphis. And we routinely played. In fact, on the eighth grade team, my eighth grade year, we were the first team in the history of Briarcrest to go undefeated. All white team, of course, 43-0. And we would routinely play the teams out of our division, the public school teams like Craigmont, Keith, and never did we rout an opponent like we routed those public school teams. And that's not me saying that braggadociously. I mean, nothing could matter less than eighth grade basketball, but it's just a point in fact that, you know, that's something I saw with my own eyes. It was much stiffer competition when you were going up against the ECS and the MUS and the Hardings. Those teams were much more up to our level than
those are white private schools.
Yeah, if anyone listening outside of Memphis doesn't know what I'm talking about, Keith, please clarify. But I mean, I lived that. I saw that with my own eyes. So it goes without saying.
But you notice how whenever whites seem to dominate a sport, the commentators and the newspapers and the people on the broadcast media like ESPN, they always have an excuse for it. For example, Tiger Woods is the golden boy of sports now, and he's black. But just about every other professional golfer, you know, the first 1,000 are white. Now, is that because whites are better golfers? No, of course not, according to ESPN. That's because whites have all sorts of insidious advantages that are the basis of or the legacy of racism.
If there is any true discrimination in this world of sports, it is anti-white bias, and I think that can be argued very
well. That's what people need to be aware of. There is anti-white bias that expresses itself in things like the sparse numbers of whites in the National Football League,
for example,
the NBA.
Let me ask you something else that has nothing to do with talent and everything to do with morals. And even then, you know, we're getting the short end of the stick, so to speak. Do you remember a baseball player by the name of John Rocker?
Yes, I do.
What did John Rocker do to basically get exiled from the Major League Baseball League?
He spoke out in an interview when he was going to play in New York, and he was being needled by a New York sports commentator, and he retorted that he didn't like playing and coming to New York to play baseball because it was like a third world country. He said he went into Times Square and could hear every language except English being spoken, and he could see every type of person in the world except a normal, natural middle American. And as a result, I mean, he was the people at ESPN and otherwise just jumped all over him. Remember when Rush Limbaugh suggested that Donovan McNabb, the black quarterback who's
right.
now playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, wasn't quite up to par, and that white quarterbacks, you know, why are white quarterbacks dominant in the National Football League?
Yeah,
well,
they
drove him right out of sports broadcasting.
That's
as
right.
a result of that.
Well, we're going to pick it up right there. A lot of people listening at home might already know where I'm going with this, but we're going to compare the John Rocker incident and contrast that against something that's big news in the sporting world this week. We're going to get to that right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're glad you're with us no matter how you're tuned in. If you're driving around in your car in one of the cities that carries the political cesspool, you're listening to us on the AM or FM radio dial.
You
maybe you're in front of the computer. If you're in front of the computer listening to us on the internet, go to our website and go to the Facebook page. Listen, I'm serious about this. I want to catch PJB. I want to catch Pat Buchanan, and then I'm going to call Pat, and I'm going to say, fella, you just got lapped by the cesspool fans on Facebook. And that's exactly what I'm going to do if you help make that happen. And to give you a little incentive, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, by the way, if any of our Facebook administrators are listening tonight, let's put up those interviews that we've done with Pat Buchanan on this show. Good friend of ours here in the cesspool, as you know. He's been on a couple of times with us. A classic never dies. I think that would be good to have up there. But, guys, if you're not on Facebook, I was on our page today. A lot of beautiful women on our Facebook page. So I can't think of a better place if you were a single guy to get a date than on the Political Cesspool fan page. You just got to check that out. And you're missing something if you don't. But we're having far too much fun here, Keith, as we continue to talk about the attempted dispossession of the founding stock and all facets of the American life, including sports. But notice that I did say attempted. We're down, but we're not out. And this show is doing a lot to rally our people and bring folks over to our normal, natural, and healthy ideology. Continuing on, though, Keith, we're at where we left off. We were talking about John Rocker. And it goes without saying that because of his very wholesome comments and very common sense comments that he made about New York turning into a third world hellhole, and he said it much more politely than that, that the media pressure that was put on the Atlanta Braves to run him out of the league probably ended up in his not being in the league for very much longer after that.
And you absolutely, and compare that with Michael Vick.
There you go. That's where I was going.
Okay, because of his criminality, his obvious criminality rather than thought crime criminality, in other words, violations against liberalism that John Rocker was guilty of. Instead, he's actually
a convicted felon.
He's a convicted felon. And, of course, there's pressure all over the place. A former coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Tony Dungy, who is black, is going to bat for him, and they finally bludgeon and pressure some NFL team into taking him back because, of course, Michael Vick is very necessary because we have too few black quarterbacks in the NFL. Of course, there are more black quarterbacks percentage-wise in the NFL than there are blacks in the United States percentage-wise, but, of course, that doesn't make any difference to the liberals that run the elite system that are in charge of sports and our culture generally, because they want blacks to dominate everything, and they want whites to embrace their supposed inferiority and say, you know, there's just no need to strive to play football or anything else. Just think of all the careers in football and basketball that have been squelched at the junior high level by kids that look at college and professional sports and say, why bother? Why should I even, you know, try to be on the basketball team or try to be on the football team? It's a lot of work, and there's just not going to be any payoff, so I'll do something else.
Well, and no telling how many young kids have done that, if they have eyes that work and ears that hear. But, yes, Keith, you couldn't have drawn a more perfect conclusion to the John Rocker versus Michael Vick scenario. John Rocker says something that most normal people would agree with without hesitation. He gets essentially booted out of the MLB. Michael Vick, a convicted felon who's been in jail for at least a couple of years for dog fighting. I mean, this is something that even women would have a problem with. I mean, we're not talking about a clever crime. I mean, this is just gutter ghetto crime, dog fighting, bulldog fighting, whatever, pit bull fighting. And not only does he get welcomed back into the NFL almost, I think he might even be a spokesman for PETA now. And I heard him on the radio saying he hurt a few dogs, but now he's changed his life and he's going to help more animals than he hurt or something to that. I'm not paraphrasing. That's almost a direct quote. And now he is offered and obviously accepted a very lucrative contract with the Philadelphia Eagles. So if that's not a double standard, I don't know what is.
Well, you know, he's going to find some way to get back in the NFL, and the elites are going to find some way to get him in there, because quite frankly, if Michael Vick doesn't play football in the NFL, his next best job option is probably riding shotgun on the neighborhood garbage truck.
Well, what kind of message does that send? Okay, let's just ask that question. What kind of message does that send? Crime pays. You can do whatever you want to. You can be a heathen. You can be a felon. And listen, a convicted felon couldn't get a job at Walmart. You can't get hired if you have a criminal record in a lot
you
of.
Can't, well, you can't work on the railroad. You can't work on the river. You can't get any number of lucrative jobs. You can't get government jobs. But if you are a black athlete, you can do like, there's another one named Dante Stallworth that killed somebody in a drunken accident. And I think he was penalized by being suspended for a couple of games. He pled guilty. He's on probation. He applies and is immediately allowed to re-enter the NFL. You know,
well, and this is what I'm talking about. And Michael Vick isn't one out of a million. I mean, a lot of these athletes are petty criminals, and Michael Vick perhaps not quite so petty, because that's a felon. But I mean, you're talking about a lot of possession of marijuana charges, cocaine. I mean, you know, they're all. A lot of them are on drugs, and this is fine. And like you said, in the real world, they wouldn't be able to get a job after being convicted of such crimes. But in the NFL.
But on the other hand, John Rocker, who basically just speaks common sense to power and says that New York has become, in effect, a third world hellhole, which it has. If you haven't visited lately, go up there and see if you agree or disagree.
When I was up there,
he is banished. He has run out of professional sports. And he's committed no crime.
When I was up in New York City, Manhattan, for that taping of the Palazan show, never have I felt more out of place, Keith. And I'm a guy who likes nice things, believe me.
But
New York's not for me. I'll stick with the
South. And sister used to live there in Manhattan, and he was from rural Illinois. And he told me, Keith, he said, between Gay Greenwich Village and the Feet East Side, I think they're about to stamp out heterosexuality altogether up here in New York.
Well, like I said, I didn't stay long enough to find out, but I will say this. We have our eye on everything here in the political cesspool. You can count on us to defend the interests of the majority, no matter where discrimination against our people manifests itself.
Well,
even
let me bring up one more point quickly before we move on.
If you don't mind, Keith, I wanted to ask you, we only have 3 minutes. I don't know if this is the point you want to bring up. Maybe you wanted to talk about the RBI program.
Yes, right. That's a perfect example.
Only 3 minutes, though. I want to quickly get through this. You got to listen to this, folks.
Here's what happens. You know, again, don't believe your lying eyes. If you see a majority of white Americans playing baseball and the others are Hispanic or black, Caribbean players, hardly any black American players, 9%, that does not speak in the least about any inherent lack of talent in baseball among black Americans. What it does, it speaks about some type of evil institutionalized racism that has kept blacks out of baseball, again, ignoring the fact that back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, baseball was the most popular sport in the black community, just like it was in the white community back then. So they come up, Major League Baseball sponsors the RBI program, and its minor league affiliates are expected to sign on. And RBI stands for Return Baseball to the Inner City. In other words, we've got to overcome this racism. We've got to get these black kids talented enough so they can take their rightful place as the majority race in Major League Baseball. And, you know, just compare that with the NBA. Is there any RBS program in the NBA, Return Basketball to the Suburbs? We're going to, you know, it just shows that, you know, that where the white kids are. Let's recruit and let's go to great efforts to try to get
white kids from America
playing in the NBA.
Get a bigger percentage of professional basketball players from the Caucasians, Doc. Of course there's no such system. Of course there's not.
No, it's heads you win, tails as heads I win, tails you lose when it comes to the white race with the predominant sports culture, not only in America but in Europe.
Unfortunately,
and
it's not
why
just
do
sports,
white people support these sports under those circumstances?
Well, that's what gets me more than anything. It's not that millions of people attend sporting events every week in America. It's that they pay hundreds of dollars to do so. And
to support these thuggish characters like Michael Vick in a lavish lifestyle, and to basically, more importantly, convince young white children that they're not good at sports. And if they're not good at sports, it's another, you know, another small step for them to conclude, I'm not good at anything.
Well, look, you know, I love sports. I'm a man's man. I love sports. I've played sports. I still play sports recreationally. But I don't want to see the cancer of cultural Marxism eat at sports the way it's eaten everything else in our society.
Do you think that black people would come to see a college basketball team or a college football team that was 80% white? But on the other hand, white people will scratch and claw and pay hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, for the opportunity of watching college football teams in which whites are relegated to a small minority of the players.
I think
it just doesn't make any sense.
Keith, we're out of time, but I think all those people are really paying to watch the white water boy serve everyone else. Maybe that's why they're all going. But listen, folks.
And his appropriately servile position.
We got to go. We'll be back in the second hour with Dr. Virginia Abernathy. Sit tight, everyone. We're not going anywhere.
Comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Baptist Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.